we need to do a little of our own analysis here. Let's do some analysis of small town America around the turn of the century, the turn of the 19th to 20th century. Small town America. Let's think about what comes to mind when you think about small town America. Probably church, a church, maybe a steeple, a little town hall, maybe a town square, gazebo in the square, maybe a band concert with the band showing up. It's probably, I'd like it to be summer, and the band is playing on a nice summer day, and they're all dressed up. It's a brass band, and they're all dressed up in their buttons and ribbons and their finery, and the whole town is out there dressed up in their fancy Sunday clothes. There's other things in this small town, small American town around the turn of the century. There's the barber shop where all the men tend to hang out, and there is probably a doctor's office, and there's probably a little general store and a post office, and some various places selling articles of clothing and things like that. No big department stores or anything like that. Everything is very compartmentalized, small town kind of place. Maybe there's, we probably don't have very many cars yet, maybe a few cars. Cars are just starting to come around. There's still a lot of horse-drawn carriages and things like that. That is the small town. That's the reality of the small town. If I'm going to build a small town in at the turn of the century in America, I'm going to build a town with all those things in it. It's going to be real. Now let's say that a little time has passed, and I have a fondness for that feeling I got from turn of the century small town America. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to build a new town, and this town is some later time, and the town is going to do all the things that that town has to do. But I am going to put in a few representations of that old American town from the turn of the century. Now remember, the American town itself at the turn of the century was the real thing. So everything in that town, all those things in that town, which are symbols of that town, are the representations of the real thing. That's the first phase. But now I'm building a different kind of town, and I just want to reference back, though. I want people to get a sense that my town is a lot like that turn of the century town. So maybe I'm going to build a main street that looks a little bit like the main street of the old turn of the century town. So maybe I do have a department store, but I make it look like it's not a department store. And my barber shop, yeah, it's a modern barber shop, and guys don't really hang around here anymore. They just come in and get a haircut and go. But I make it look like an old-fashioned shop, an old-fashioned barber shop. And I'll have maybe a candy store here. Maybe there'll be a candy store, and penny candy used to be the thing, and now penny candy costs a buck, you know, and we're going to hide that particular reality, and we're going to make it look like it's penny candy. We're going to even call it the penny candy store. Ye old penny candy store. Ye old ice cream shoppy, whatever the case may be. We want that sense of the old-time Americana. The thing is, we don't have the old-time Americana here. We're trying to simulate the old-time Americana. As Baudrillard would say, our attempt here to use those symbols masks and denatures a profound reality. So the reality was, back then, at the turn of the century. We have a new reality now, presumably, but we are using the signs of the old reality. We're hiding something, or pretending to be something we're not. Okay, more time passes, and keep in mind that it doesn't have to be time passing. Other things can happen other than the passage of time for the analogy to work. More time passes, and now I'm building a new town, but I don't have a barber shop in this town. I don't have a penny candy store. I don't have any of those things. But nonetheless, I pretend that I do. I build a penny candy shop, so to speak, something that looks like a penny candy shop. But you go inside there and, well, it's just a candy store. And they don't even pretend to sell penny candy anymore. Or they don't even do anything that has that penny candy. But on the outside, it was ye old penny candy store, let's say. Or ye old candy shop. And it looked like ye old candy shop. It was designed. We have the ability to make it look exactly like the original shop. But I go in, and there's nothing like the original shop whatsoever. As a matter of fact, they're selling fancy Belgian chocolates for $40 a box. And if I want to buy one of them, it costs $4. We don't even have the dollar candy anymore. We have gotten so far away from the reality, which was that penny candy shop, that we're in the third phase. The third phase marks the absence of a profound reality. You know what this might be? This might be a mall now. I'm not even building a town. I'm building a mall. A mall that we'll have, let's say, a town center. I might even call my mall the town center. And in that town center, there will be a gazebo. I mean, the whole point of a gazebo is to have a roof over one's head when you have the band, so that if it starts to rain or something, the band can keep on playing or whatever. I mean, the whole point of it's an outdoor structure, but you might put an outdoor structure indoors. You might have the whole mall designed to look like an old town, an old-fashioned town, a town at the turn of the century. But, of course, it isn't a town at the turn of the century. They're not selling the same kind of stuff. You don't have individuals owning the stores. All the stores were owned by franchises. You have no relation to any reality whatsoever. It's its own pure simulacrum, as Baudrillard would say. That's phase four. So let's look at the Disney model. Walt Disney spent a few years of his life in the town of Marceline, Missouri. And I mean a very few years. But these were extremely important to him. And he, when the time came to build Disneyland, decided he wanted to have a main street. It was going to reflect the life he had in Marceline. So he built the main street. He put all those signs in there that we were talking about before, the barbershop and the candy store and all this sort of thing. As a matter of fact, in the very beginning, when Disneyland first opened, the barbershop, for instance, and the butcher and so forth, actually were real barbershops and butcher shops. Now, of course, why anyone would go to Disneyland to get a haircut or to buy a hunk of ham is beyond me. But nonetheless, they did have these as real shops. In any case, the question becomes, okay, how does this relate to Marceline, Missouri? Well, first of all, it doesn't look like Marceline. If you see a picture of Marceline, it doesn't look like Marceline. Additionally, the whole thing is forced perspective. In other words, the buildings aren't actual size buildings. They get smaller as you go up the building, so it'll look like it's the real thing when you're standing below them. But in fact, they're smaller. They're not real buildings, and you know this. You sense this as you're walking through them. I mean, even further, some of these buildings now, I mean, are just facade. And inside the building, it's selling t-shirts. So it may say butcher shop or barber shop or music shop or whatever on the outside, but inside it's nothing but t-shirts all the way. Now, when this was being built, of course, it was to some extent being informed by the images in Disney's mind of Marceline, but it was also being informed to a great extent by the images that Disney had already put into various films that reflected turn-of-the-century life. So the question becomes, what is Main Street USA a copy of? Is it a copy of the real Marceline? Is it a copy of the Marceline that was in the various film versions? I mean, how far away from this is it from any reality whatsoever? Well, the answer to the question is, of course, it's totally far away. It has no relationship whatsoever to any reality. It is a random collection of signs pointing to
these realities, except the signs are so disconnected from the realities that there is no reality whatsoever. It's a simulacrum. Again, as Baudrillard would say, no relation to any reality whatsoever. It's its own pure simulacrum. Another example. Once upon a time, pirates were real. And this time goes, let's say, ends in the 1600s and into the 1700s. Pirates were very real. If you crossed the, you know, into the Caribbean, there were pirates there. There were pirates of the Caribbean. Now, hundreds of years of time passing between the actual existence of the pirates essentially made those pirates into something else. So by the turn of the 19th to 20th century, pirates informed things like Peter Pan. I mean, Peter Pan is written in 1904. J.M. Barrie uses pirates as the thing that kids play at. Children play at being pirates. So pirates have gone from whatever reality they have into being a child's game. So the signs of piracy, the skull and the crossbone and the eye patch or whatever, are now the things of the child's play. In the 20th century, with the rise of movies, pirates were a big thing. I mean, during the 30s and 40s and into the 50s, pirates were very much a genre of films. It was an expensive and hard genre to film, so there wasn't like a bazillion like westerns. You could do a western in the backyard. But pirates, you needed a boat, you needed water, blah, blah, blah. But nonetheless, it was popular. Errol Flynn, Tyrone Power, there were versions of Treasure Island and so forth. So the popular imagination really picked up on pirates. And this went on for 20 or 30 years. And Disneyland opened in 1955. And when Disneyland opened, there was already talk in the Imagineering area of having some kind of pirate attraction. And the idea was that this pirate attraction would be a walkthrough. You would actually walk through and see tableaus of real pirates. And I want you to remember something now. Already, back in the turn of the century, pirates were just this vague memory. This was some kind of game. Now, in the 30s, pirates became a Hollywood dream. So what Disney was talking about doing back in 1955, when Disneyland opened, was a simulation based on the Hollywood dream. I mean, there was very little connection to the reality of pirates at this point. What he was going to do is, hey, pirates are popular in the movies, so we're going to do some pirate stuff too. Now, he didn't do it right away when Disneyland opened.
Now, in the 1964-65 World's Fair, Walt Disney was very active, and he built four rides, four attractions. Then one of these was It's a Small World, which had the boats that just keep going through the ride, and that was a new ride mechanism at the time. And there's also the audio animatronic character of Abraham Lincoln for the Illinois exhibit. You know, he stood up and gave a little chat. And in the mid-60s, they took these technologies, put them together, and came up with the attraction in Disneyland of Pirates of the Caribbean. And as I say, this opened, I think, in 1967, and this was the last attraction that Walt himself worked on personally before he died. And it was pretty much the end of the era of pirates in the popular imagination. There wasn't a lot of other things going on with pirates, but this was a fantastic attraction. It's still a fantastic attraction. It's a signature attraction. It became a signature attraction at Disney World and later on in Tokyo Disneyland and in Disneyland Paris. So this is a popular, important attraction. The thing is, however, this was built in 1967. About 35 years later, pirates are gone in the popular imagination. Nobody thinks about pirates anymore. And Disney, in pretty much the nadir of its creative life, Disney is repurposing itself. It's taking stuff it already has and trying to make money out of it some other way, and they decide to make movies out of some of the rides. The first one was the Country Bear Jubilee. This was a classic film, I'm sure. I happened to miss it. They also were making a film of the Haunted Mansion, and they made a film, of course, of Pirates of the Caribbean. Now, at this point, the people in America, you, listening to this, probably never really studied pirates for more than 2 minutes in your entire academic career. Everything you knew about pirates was taken from Pirates of the Caribbean, if in fact you had ever been on that attraction. That's your entire exposure to the idea of pirates. Pirates of the Caribbean, of course, the attraction consists of nothing but abstracted signs of piracy. There's pirate ships, there's cannons firing, there's fires, there's the auctions of the women, and they're dunking the mare, and there's gold, and there's skeletons, and burials, and treasure, and all this kind of stuff. All those random images of pirates, no reality whatsoever. You don't go through there and say, oh, it's Blackbeard. Oh, it's Captain Kidd. You don't do any of that. You just go through and you get this sense of piracy. As a matter of fact, as I say, it's the only sense most of us have of piracy, because we've never seen a pirate movie, never read a pirate book, no idea of pirates, except that and maybe Peter Pan. So you can easily see the progression from real pirates to the movies of pirates in the 30s and 40s, to the simulacrum of pirates, very clear step-by-step movement a la Baudrillard. But we get this fascinating coda 35 years later. So it's 35 years of having nothing but Pirates of the Caribbean, the attraction. We get a movie called Pirates of the Caribbean, which is an absolute, unexpected, boffo hit. Next thing you know, everybody who knows anything about pirates probably knows it because they have seen the movie of Pirates of the Caribbean. More people will have seen the movie of Pirates of the Caribbean in the couple of years since its release than have been on any of the attractions. It's just the way the numbers work. So, the understanding now of many, many people around the world of what pirates were like is based on a movie based on a simulacrum of piracy. And it gets even better. Because as I am saying this now, Pirates of the Caribbean, the attractions in California and Orlando, are both shut down for refurbishing. And when they reopen in July, when the second of the Pirates of the Caribbean films comes out, the ride, the simulacrum, is going to now include characters from the first film. Jack Sparrow and Barbarossa and maybe some others are actually going to inhabit the ride simulacrum. I cannot tell you how complicated that is in a Baudrillardian sense of reality. I'm glad he's alive to hear about it. Baudrillard would say that the world is like this. Baudrillard would say that the USA, for instance, is totally Disney-infected. Baudrillard would say that the United States of America is just a collection of random signs representing no reality. And certainly, Disney has inspired an awful lot of what goes on in the USA, at least in terms of, say, architecture. When I was talking about that building in the mall with the protection from the non-existent rain, well, an awful lot of mall architecture and town architecture is directly attributable back to the kind of theme architecture of the parks like the Disney parks.